We firstly would like to thank you the invitation that was done in Angola by the Director General. We really appreciate under the name of Excellency, the President of Republic of Angola. Going straight forward to the symposium, we have been participating in the debates undercover, of course, but just to let you know that we would like to focus more on the big challenges that Angola has after all this time being prepared and working with small farmers, and the big challenge on the engagement of the Ministry of Environment and the intersectorial as well within the country. Focus on the climate change regions, we should call attention and we work mostly on humid, as well as we take note that in the north is more rainfall, which are more heavy and high temperature, and the central plateau is average annual temperature where mostly of the activities on agroecology do take place. Out of 1,277 million kilometers square, only 47% of Angola is able to do agriculture. Apart and on top of above 24 million population, only 40% lives in rural areas. So to that, we have 57.5 million arable land to build and to produce on or cultivate for agricultural crops. If you look in detail, the way we are coming as a regulatory framework for agroecology in mainstream in Angola. We don't have a national policy as yet, but it's being prepared and now ready for submission. But we look at documents such as the National Development Plan 2018-2022. We face for the SDGs. We look at National Action Plan to fight against desertification as a result of Angola's commitment to the United Nations Convention against Desertification. We look at national commissions. That was a steering committee built by the presidential desk that concentrates most of the whole ministers, like pertaining and connected to the agroecology, which is the multi-sectorial task for the environment, and a national commission, a technical commission for biodiversity, climate change, and desertification. We also look at the NAPA, National Adaptation Program of Action, a medium-term strategy program for the agrarian sector 2018-2022, and a country program that we have with Angola and FAO, straight not only to the environment but to the country also pertaining to agriculture. So there has been done a lot of public awareness to understand this issue of what is this agroecology, why we need to talk about that in the country, and also there has been a lot of small farmers contribution and participation from lessons learned on what they do. This is how we came out and we built as a way forward of an alternative solution for financing and to look at the local development. Then we developed a so-called approach agroecology, and then we start coming up with the issues like, do we really understand what is this agroecology? Are we not combining too many things into one thing? So then we could come across that it is an integration program that deals with resilience of local population, agrobiodiversity, a sustainability approach, socio-cultural dimension for safe world and environmental conservation, food security, and economy generation. So we look at issues as policies, guidelines, procedures, and standard. This is all came together to as a natural resource of management. Of course, we also face some threats and as well challenge on agroecology in Angola, such as soil erosion, declining biomass productivity, and degradation of soil properties, land tenure uses, and over-exploitation of natural resources, weak technical and institutional capacity, food insecurity and poverty in rural areas, as well the impact on climate change at different levels, mainly an adaptation that we are now also developing a program. And then we came out, why and do we really need to have an agroecology in Angola? It's just a follow-up because we are partnering with the FAO, and then the question came that no. Angola is a rich and natural resource, and this is a way forward also as an alternative measure to engage small farmers, civil society, and also the increase of pressure on natural resources as a result of poverty alleviation, food security. As well, the impact of agriculture was pointed as one of the major bases for economy desertification in the country. So we needed to reinforce capacities for sustainable land management in all dimensions, like pest management and the other, organisms for biodiversity. We needed a holistic approach for natural resources management that considers environmental, social, cultural, productive, and economic dimensions, and then we came up as a sum or an equation for agroecology again. Then we continue to strengthen technical and institutional capacities that includes a legal framework. Then we developed principles, and since 2006, we launched a program called a Farmer Field School approach that was done in the Central Plateau with FAO as a technical and methodological support. So going back 1990s, there was a program that when we start learning some of these issues, and we call them Terra program, that was also supported by FAO and has been strengthening capacities for improved management, land management and administration, reinforcing agroecology principles among farmers and institutions. Today, we can say that we have, since 2004, Ministry of Environment, its engagement on implementation of portfolio with the JEF. We have now identified that it needs to be an assured holistic approach by integrating various ministries. And we call upon Ministry of Agriculture and Forestry, Ministry of Social Action, Women and Family, Ministry of Commerce, Land, local government, which means the provincial governments, NGO, traditional authorities, the media, also the different church that we have acknowledged in the country. We also looked at integration of agroecology principles on agriculture and landscape management. A technical and methodological support was given and provided by FAO. So, apart from that, then we developed four programs. One is at the end that we call RETESA program. Is mainly on land rehabilitation and rangelands management in smallholders agro-pastoral production system in southern eastern part of Angola, that 2014-2018. And one of the main results was the land degradation assessment in more than 7,000 hectares. There was a development of territorial management plans for improved pastoral areas management in more than 30,000 hectares using the same approach. There was also a land rehabilitation with endogenic plants and principles in more than 500 hectares, as well as national policy on sustainable land management integrating agroecology principles has been developed in a broad consultative process and is now ready for submission. And we also have a dissemination for directorate for volunteer and land governance. We also look at ISEA project, which is also integrating climate change resilience into agricultural and agro-pastoral productive system through soil fertility management in key productive and vulnerable areas using the Farmer Field School approach. So one of the strongest outcomes is 115,000 farmers adopted the CCASLM practices. And environmental and agriculture policies and programs at national and decentralized levels also were integrated aspects within. So now we have on the go two new projects, which one is based on sustainable land management in target landscapes in Angola, southeastern region, that we aim to end in 2023, aligned with the strategy of the SDGs, that we will pretend to recognize the agroecological zoning integrated planning, as well as have sustainable management, rehabilitation of landscape, and economic and financial levels approach for the SLM. The other program is the ICE SLM project, integrating climate change into the environment and sustainable land degradation with governance, capacity building, and institutional strengthening, promoting climate change adaptation measures, practicing more other different countries that will now be more to the South Province, and a big challenge will be to the forest as well. So knowledge management through a coordination mechanism with the other projects are also being into evaluation. As a sum up in a conclusion and a way forward, we would like to add that South of Angola impact on soils is still a pilot in how we need to look at national level. There is a lot of strength that has been given to that area, but still we need to discuss more and to see the deficiency of things in the southern parts of Angola, and also analyze if agroecology is not just one way forward, or is it the way forward to go in an integrated manner. A cross-cutting agenda that includes NGOs and also a specialized NGOs within agriculture and environmental should be more strong enough to work together from lessons learned to in a participatory aspects. We would like to share that we have also a very specific NGO that deals with the issues in the coastal line, and it's been a big challenge because we could bring fishery sectors and the ocean together to discuss about agroecology linking to the wetlands issue. So agroecology can be maybe accommodated through schools at small level. We need to engage the regions where we are in. In our case, more specifically in Africa continent, we would like to have also a look at the chemicals, the biosafety procedures. What are we doing with our small parcel, our soil? What is the level of engagement that we are going to do? So the government of Angola is behind the all private sector and also the NGOs to continue and to strengthen with policies, and also to see in an open dialogue what can be done as a way forward. So we would like to mention also that rural communities have a substantial dependency in nature resources, which are now under additional pressure due to the need of diversifying the Angola economy. Agroecology could represent a way forward to develop an agrarian sector. Need to strengthen technical institutional capabilities in strategy planning. It is important to see and to share best practices and good examples that are being developed but are indeed not well streamed. Angola counts on FAO and all the partners here present, as well as the civil society, to discuss within the institution and to foster capacity and to bring adopted good practice for mainstreaming agroecology and sustainable land management in the line with the SDGs. We also, in general, would like to welcome the declaration for this symposium, and we thank you.
Obrigado, Minister. Thank you very much, Minister. So let me give the floor now to His Excellency Batu Bassieri, Minister of the Environment, Climate Change and Green Economy of Burkina Faso. Minister, please.
Merci. Au moment de prendre la parole, je voudrais traduire mes sentiments de reconnaissance à l'Organisation mondiale pour l'alimentation pour la haute confiance faite à mon pays à travers ma modeste personne en vue de partager bien sûr l'expérience de mon pays en matière d'agroécologie. Et pour y parvenir, je voulais d'abord situer le contexte. Le Burkina Faso est un pays sahélien situé au cœur de l'Afrique de l'Ouest, avec une superficie de 274 200 km², une population estimée à 19 millions avec 52% de femmes, un écosystème fragile, bien sûr soumis à l'action de l'homme et au changement climatique. 70% de la population est agricole, dont 30% bien sûr participent au PIB national. L'agriculture, donc, pour l'instant au Burkina Faso, est extensive et de type familial. Et ses rendements et sa productivité sont faibles. D'où la volonté du Burkina de rechercher les solutions afin d'accroître, bien sûr, cette productivité. En matière d'agroécologie, le Burkina Faso a une histoire. Je pense qu'il est très important pour nous de donner l'historique de l'agroécologie au Burkina, qui ne date pas de maintenant. L'agroécologie au Burkina date de décennies. Il a été introduit pour la première fois au Burkina Faso dans les années 80, grâce à une rencontre d'un Burkinabé du nom de Seibou Ouédraogo avec un Français d'origine algérienne, François Rabhi, un amoureux de l'écologie, pour partager leur expérience entre le Burkina, ce qui est fait au Burkina, et ce qui est fait en France. Cette rencontre va nécessiter le déplacement de Rabhi au Burkina Faso dans les années 81. Mais il faut dire que l'agroécologie a pris ses envolées grâce à l'arrivée au pouvoir en 83 du président Thomas Sankara, qui a vite compris que le développement du Burkina doit d'abord passer par le peuple lui-même. Et il a fait cet appel à l'ensemble du peuple burkinabé en disant « Si nous voulons nous développer, nous devons d'abord compter sur nos propres forces. » Il a vite aussi compris que, étant un pays sahélien avec 80% d'agriculteurs, il fallait d'abord développer cette agriculture, parce qu'il était convaincu que la valorisation de l'agriculture pouvait permettre aux Burkinabés non seulement de créer l'emploi, mais d'atteindre l'autosuffisance alimentaire. Mais comme il avait déjà perçu que Rabhi faisait un travail exceptionnel au Burkina, il a automatiquement rappelé pour lui demander s'il pouvait élaborer une stratégie nationale pour la diffusion de l'agroécologie sur l'ensemble du territoire du Burkina Faso. Et je vous assure qu'en 3 ans, nous avons atteint l'autosuffisance alimentaire au Burkina Faso. De telle sorte que nos pays voisins, on en a en tout cas apporté un appui aux pays voisins parce qu'on avait produit plus. Et ça, c'est une expérience. Mais malheureusement, en 87, le président Thomas Sankara, comme vous le savez tous, a quitté le pouvoir sous, bien sûr, par un coup d'État, ce qui a ralenti la volonté du pays à aller définitivement vers l'agroécologie. Mais néanmoins, Rabhi avait déjà créé des centres de formation pour former les agriculteurs du Burkina Faso à la nouvelle méthode, tout en leur apprenant comment, pour un pays aride sahélien, on pouvait faire pousser dans le désert, bien sûr, ce qu'on appelait chez nous de la nourriture au sens plus simple du mot. Donc, cela voudrait dire que l'agroécologie a pu être intégrée dans les mœurs des paysans du Burkina Faso depuis ce temps. Aujourd'hui, on compte pratiquement 100 000 paysans qui pratiquent l'agroécologie au Burkina. Nous avons un grand centre de formation à l'est du pays qui forme désormais des paysans, bien sûr, à cette nouvelle perception de l'agriculture qui intègre, bien sûr, les questions liées à l'environnement. Chemin faisant, nous constatons aujourd'hui que l'agroécologie est une réalité au Burkina Faso dans la mesure où elle peut s'exprimer à travers de bonnes pratiques dont les principales sont les suivantes. La vulgarisation de la production de la fumure organique. Nous avons la production et l'utilisation de biopesticides au Burkina. L'agriculture biologique, l'agroforesterie et les micro-aménagements qui sont des outils aujourd'hui intégrés dans la vision du Burkina. Donc pour nous aujourd'hui, parler de l'agroécologie, c'est revenir aux fondamentaux. Parce qu'en tant que pays sahélien, pour y atteindre l'autosuffisance alimentaire, il faut repartir, bien sûr, à ses fondamentaux. Donc pour nous, après cette évolution, nous avons constaté qu'avec l'arrivée au pouvoir depuis 2015 du président Roch Marc Christian Kabore, tu as également compris que le Burkina Faso doit d'abord compter sur ses propres forces également, en y développant bien sûr une agriculture durable. D'où sa volonté de faire la promotion du Burkina, bien sûr, à travers une transition vers une économie verte. Pour nous, par définition, l'économie verte suppose une gestion rationnelle des ressources naturelles afin d'accroître la productivité dans l'équité, en pensant aux générations futures et en minimisant au maximum les risques environnementaux. Voilà la vision pour laquelle, dans laquelle le Burkina s'est engagé depuis 2015. Nous avons élaboré notre stratégie nationale en matière d'économie verte. Aujourd'hui, c'est une référence au niveau du Burkina. Nous avons également, bien sûr, fait la promotion des modes de consommation durables au Burkina. Également, pour expérimenter, bien sûr, cette notion d'économie verte, cette notion de bonne gestion de ces ressources naturelles, il a été préconisé la création de 2000 éco-villages sur l'ensemble du territoire du Burkina Faso. 2000 éco-villages, ce ne sont pas des villages à créer, c'est des villages à transformer, bien sûr, conformément aux normes de développement qui intègrent non seulement les questions de l'environnement, mais en prenant en compte l'existence de la population. C'est vrai, il faut préserver l'environnement, mais il faut que la population mange à sa faim, règle toutes les autres questions. Par conséquent, les éco-villages auront au moins sur 4 stratégies nationales, à savoir l'environnement, la sécurité alimentaire, la bonne gouvernance, les énergies renouvelables et les autres questions qui associent bien sûr la population, de telle sorte que même si on est au village, on doit être heureux de rester chez soi et de ne pas forcément courir vers la ville. Parce que nous avons compris que le développement est possible en ville, mais également au niveau de la campagne. Ça, c'est un engagement fort du Burkina Faso. Parce que nous venons juste, il y a quelques jours, d'adopter la stratégie nationale en matière d'économie verte. Et je pense que ceux qui sont dans la salle, s'il y a des investisseurs qui sont intéressés, bien sûr, pour la vision et l'investissement au profit des populations et à la base, nous avons une stratégie nationale en plus d'un plan d'action permettant à chacun de voir comment il est possible d'accroître la productivité, bien sûr, à travers l'agroécologie, mais bien sûr en prenant en compte les autres questions liées à l'environnement. Mais au regard de toutes ces questions, ce que l'on peut se poser, quel est le lien de l'agroécologie aujourd'hui avec la thématique pour laquelle nous sommes réunis à Rome? Pour nous, on se réfère bien sûr à la FAO, qui pense qu'avec une population estimée à pratiquement 9 milliards d'ici 2050, il faudra accroître la productivité autour de 70% pour pouvoir nourrir le minimum de ces 9 milliards. La question de fond, c'est comment y arriver. Comment y arriver avec la situation dans laquelle où nous avons compris que depuis ce qui est fait, nous ne sommes pas encore parvenus, bien sûr, à réaliser l'autosuffisance alimentaire, surtout les pays sahéliens, des pays africains comme les nôtres. Donc, à cette question, au Burkina Faso, au regard de l'expérience que nous avons connue des années 87, de 83 à 87, nous pensons que l'agroécologie peut être efficace. C'est possible. C'est possible d'un point de vue agronomique et économique et qu'elle représente un modèle d'avenir productif et durable. Il est donc possible pour nous de faire autrement pour résoudre la question alimentaire au respect de l'environnement et bien sûr des autres ressources naturel. En conclusion, que peut-on dire? Pour nous, l'agroécologie n'est donc pas une réponse au défi de la souveraineté alimentaire. Elle est la réponse. C'est la réponse à cette question. Et non, bien sûr, la vision. Alors, encore faudrait-il qu'on se comprenne sur un certain nombre de défis que nous allons énumérer en trois. Bien sûr, il y a des sous-défis et d'autres défis peuvent s'ajouter. Il faut d'abord qu'on se comprenne. La compréhension de la notion d'agroécologie pour l'ensemble, bien sûr, de tous les pays qui veulent aller dans ce sens. Il faut que nous nous comprenions, parce qu'il y a tellement de définitions, tellement de visions, il faut d'abord que nous nous accordions sur cette vision de définition, de compréhension d'agroécologie. Ensuite, il faudrait, bien sûr, lutter contre la désertification. Et bien sûr, régler les questions de l'eau. Voilà ce que nous pouvons dire en quelques mots. La vision du Burkina, de son évolution, de l'agroécologie à la date d'aujourd'hui, et la perception pour l'avenir, quand nous sommes convaincus que pour y arriver, on est obligé de mieux gérer les ressources naturelles. Sinon, je pense que les générations futures nous demanderont des comptes. Parce que non seulement on aura sacrifié les générations présentes, mais encore pire pour les générations à venir. Je vous remercie.
Thank you very much, Minister. Let's follow with a video presentation from His Excellency Luiz Felipe Arauz Cavallini, the Minister of Agriculture and Livestock of Costa Rica. Minister, you have the floor.
Yes, good afternoon to everybody. I would like to thank FAO for the opportunity to be here. I would like to thank especially the technicians that made possible that I could participate in this symposium and who went through all the trouble to achieving this video conference. So I'm very grateful. As the former speaker said, agroecology is the way to go. It holds the solution for many of the most pressuring problems in agriculture, such as loss of biological diversity, desertification, pollution, and climate change. When we put all this together, we think that we need to scale up agroecology to achieve sustainable development and move from sustainable agriculture to sustainable food systems. Next slide, please. When we look at the sustainable development goals, we have 17 goals that are, as I said before, interdependent. We have goal 3, which is good health and well-being, which depends on goal 2, zero hunger, depends on decent work, depends on quality education, depends on clean and water for drinking and for the other uses. So we're thinking that we need to focus on this, and to do that, we need to focus on responsible, not only consumption, but especially responsible production, that is a sustainable agriculture, especially in these times of climate change. We think that agroecology, as I said before, holds the solution for climate change, as we're going to see before. And most of my talk is going to be directed towards the role of agroecology in climate change. And we are going to share some of the experiences that we have developed in Costa Rica for that. Next slide, please. When we think about food security, agriculture, and climate change, the easy way of looking at it is a simple linear way. But if we look at the next slide, Next slide, please. It is not a linear process. It is more like an interactive process in which agriculture, climate change, and food security interact with each other. Next slide, please. And if we add some complexity to this, we can see that agriculture and climate change have a threefold relationship. Agriculture is a victim of climate change because of the effect of temperature and precipitation changes, and which affect agriculture. But also, agriculture can be regarded as responsible for climate change. About 12 to 15% of greenhouse gases that cause climate change are produced by agricultural practices. And third, agriculture is part of the solution to climate change because it can contribute to the reduction of greenhouse gases. But also, when we see the relationship of agriculture with food security, we see that also it is a more complex relationship than just only the production of food, because food security has to do with availability, has to do with access, with consumption, with the biological utilization of food, all of which are affected by climate change and therefore are related to agriculture. Let's move to the next slide, please. We know that agriculture can feed the world and feed the environment at the same time. Industrial agriculture is claimed to be able to feed the world, but at the expense of the environment. We think that agriculture and the environment protection can go together, but we need fundamental changes. And I'm going to make the case for a concept. Let's move to the next slide, please. I would like to make the case for a climate-smart agriculture. The Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy in 2015 wrote a paper in which they bring about their worry about this concept of climate-smart agriculture, and also civil society groups have been doing that, and they wrote this paper called The Clever Ambiguity of Climate-Smart Agriculture. And they claim that there are different approaches, and we agree with that. There are different approaches. There is this simplistic approach that we're going to come up with a silver bullet to reduce climate impact of agriculture. And we view maybe things like GMOs and things like that that will solve all our problems. And then we have a more complex approach based on agroecological knowledge. And knowledge-based agriculture is the key to the word smart in climate-smart agriculture. And that is the approach that we believe on. We don't believe in a simplistic silver bullet approach. Not that we have any thing against GMOs, but we don't just we just don't believe in silver bullets. So we are going to a more complex approach. Next slide, please. In which climate-smart agriculture at the same time addresses productivity, adaptation, and mitigation through eco-competitiveness. Next slide, please. And to achieve this, we need to understand the underlying agroecological processes that can help us achieve real climate-smart agriculture. We are going to present a conceptual framework in which mitigation strategies, first of all, can improve adaptation to climate change. Some people think that mitigation and adaptation to climate change need to be viewed differently. But we think that they're complementary if we take this agroecological approach. For example, water management. Water management is clearly an adaptation strategy but also it's a mitigation strategy. The way we do water management can define if we have anaerobic or aerobic conditions in the soil, or whether we produce methane in rice paddies, or we produce nitrous oxide. So the production of greenhouse gases has to do also with water management. Microclimate modification. For example, shade in pastures. Shade is an adaptation measure because it reduces temperature and reduces thermal stress for cattle. But also, because shade is provided by trees, then we have also carbon capture in pastures by adding arborization to pastures. Nutrient management. If we do it right, we promote more uptake and less waste that goes to produce greenhouse gases. Soil organic matter. Soil organic matter, it's an adaptation strategy because it improves root health, improve the ability of the plant to absorb water and nutrients, but also soil organic matter helps to capture carbon in the soil. Next slide, please. Another important concept is that greenhouse gas production in agriculture results from system inefficiencies. For example, nitrous oxide, one of the main greenhouse gases in produced by agriculture. If we see nitrogen can either go to produce protein and therefore productivity, or can go to other environmental fates, one of which is nitrous oxide, which enhances climate change. But if we take this view, next, please do click so we can show the next slide, please. Okay, nitrous oxide then represents nitrogen that did not contribute to productivity. That's why we say it is an efficiency of the system. Next slide, please. Therefore, reducing greenhouse gases can increase efficiency, lowering costs, or increasing productivity. But to do that, we need knowledge of the agroecosystem. Next slide, please. The third element of this conceptual framework is that agricultural systems provide opportunities for carbon sequestration in trees and in soil. Next slide, please. How do we make this change? How do we move from theory to practice? And here I'm going to show you a couple of examples from Costa Rica. One is with livestock. We have put together a low-carbon livestock program, a livestock NAMA, in which the main components are we have live fences, rotational grazing, improved pastures, and improved fertilization. With those practices put together, we are able to have some intermediate effects, such as increasing animal density and productivity, more efficient pasture use and space. We increase the number of trees. Therefore, we have shade, which helps, as I said before, increase productivity. We have healthier pastures, and therefore an improved diet, increased productivity and increased reproduction rate. We have greenhouse gas effects, which are shown in blue in these slides. We reduce emissions of nitrous oxide. We increase the capture of carbon dioxide in soil and in trees. We reduce emissions of nitrous oxide in pastures, but also emissions of methane from enteric fermentation in cattle. And we have co-benefits, which are shown here in green, like biodiversity conservation, improvement of soil quality, improved water quality, and improved landscape connectivity. And we're going to show you some results because we really have moved from theory to practice. Next slide, please. We can see here how animal load has been increasing in the farms. We have pilot farms, more than 100 pilot farms in Costa Rica with this program, in which we have seen increases in animal load. Next slide, please. Next, please. We have measured the carbon balance at the farm level. We can see here the carbon that has been captured in forested area and in trees within pastures, and compared with the emissions, which 99% of those are methane from enteric fermentation of the cattle. Next, please. Next, please. We have seen an increase in milk production also with these systems. Next, please. So in cattle, we have seen benefits both in productivity and sustainability by using ecological principles to design systems that are better adapted to climate change. Coffee, it's another sector that we have tackled. I have to mention here that both cattle and coffee, we already have carbon neutral farms. And this is what we have done in coffee. Next slide, please. Okay, we have worked at the farm level with good fertilization practices to reduce nitrous oxide emissions. We have worked with agroforestry systems. Shaded coffee has many, many other benefits that most of you already know. And at the mill, at the coffee mill, we have put a residual water treatment. We have moved from oxidation ponds to irrigation of nearby pastures with residual water. And also, we have done some improvements in solid waste management. So we have reduced the greenhouse gas production from that. Next slide, please. Good fertilization practices, especially sources of nitrogen and rates. We have been able to reduce the production of nitrous oxide by 35% without losing productivity. Next slide, please. Next. Next slide, please. As far as solid waste management, we have moved for composting. We discovered that composting, especially composting with worms, was producing a lot of greenhouse gases. So with work with the University of Costa Rica, we moved to gasification to produce energy for the mill, and we were able to reduce greenhouse gas production, as we can see in the graph. Next slide, please. Next, please. We can see wastewater treatment. The emissions per 258 kilograms of fruit, which is a standard measure for coffee. In the oxidation pond, we had much more emissions of carbon dioxide that we have when we spray in the pastures the residual water. Next slide, please. Next. Okay, one of the things that has been mentioned in this symposium is that we need to scale up and scale out agroecology. To do that, we need to learn from nature, not only at the field level, but also at the higher levels. And scaling up and scaling out in a complex system like an agroecosystem come together. We cannot scale up agriculture without scaling out agroecology. If we look at natural processes in agro, in ecosystems, and also in agroecosystems, we know, and this is ecological theory that all of you are familiar with, that diversity brings low vulnerability, connectivity, resilience, and coevolution, and the efficient use of resources in natural systems comes to better use of energy, recycling, and at the end say self-maintenance of the systems. And all that brings sustainability. So how can we take these principles into scaling up agroecology? For example, diversity. We need to bring biodiversity, scale it up from the farm level to landscape level or regional area-wide level. Increasing biodiversity will enhance biological control, will allow to produce biofertilizers, both through microorganisms and through green manure. But also, diversity will increase connectivity, and we'll go back to that a little bit later. Also, the efficient use of resources, like recycling. We know all the benefits of recycling to produce fertilizer, compost, but also, as was mentioned with the representative of Burkina Faso, going to a green economy means that we use the byproducts in adding value to those. So that is another application of natural processes and the recycling process. Let me give you one more example, how connectivity is a sustainable element and can bring innovative business opportunities. This is a pineapple agricultural chain. We all are familiar with the agricultural chain products. And then we have the residues that cause, next slide please, cause pollution. And we can reduce that pollution by creating a new value chain in the pineapple by using those residues. So far we are within the pineapple value chain. Next slide please. But we can move from agri-chains to agro-industrial ecosystem. Next slide, please. And we're going to move rapidly in the next slide. We have the same, the byproduct agri-chain. We're not going to talk about the fresh fruit agri-chain. But we, if we see these other chains that can be related to this, for example, fiber and wood chips can be used to produce agglomerates, and that's another, a new business that can come from bringing together two industries. And if we look at the other, the lower part of the graph, we have the shrimp industry, in which we have the shells that are a byproduct that produce contamination, but the shell contains protein and chitin. Next slide, please. And but if you use the bromelain from the pineapple chain, we can use bromelain is a enzyme that reduces protein, and we can produce amino acids from that, and we have pure chitin that also has a lot of value, whether in the agriculture and the pharmacological business. So that's another possibility of an innovative entrepreneurship that can come from linking different chains using agroecological principles. So in conclusion, agroecology can help us solve the most pressing problems of agriculture, including climate change, achieving sustainability and productivity. Scaling up and scaling out agricultural principles are necessary to create area-wide resilience, less dependence on artificial inputs, and create new business opportunities. And knowledge, whether it be scientific or traditional knowledge, are key elements to enhancing the contribution of agroecology to the Sustainable Development Goals. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. So, let me now give the floor to His Excellency Stefan Travert, the Minister of for Agriculture, Agri-Food and Forestry of France. Please.
Merci, Monsieur le Directeur Général, cher José Graziano da Silva, Mesdames et Messieurs les Ministres, Excellences, Mesdames et Messieurs en vos grades et qualités. Je suis bien évidemment très heureux de participer aujourd'hui à cette table ronde sur l'avenir de l'agroécologie et je remercie le Directeur Général de son invitation. Je tenais en effet à être présent aujourd'hui pour réaffirmer d'une part l'engagement fort de la France dans la transition agroécologique, que ce soit au plan national comme au plan international. Cet engagement, il est parti du constat que l'agriculture et l'alimentation font face à des défis qui se multiplient, des défis auxquels nous sommes tous confrontés, le défi climatique, le défi de la sécurité alimentaire, celui de la biodiversité, celui de la fertilité des sols, le défi d'offrir à nos consommateurs des produits d'une qualité sanitaire irréprochable et de répondre enfin aux attentes sociétales. Et enfin, et ce n'est pas le moindre des défis, c'est celui de permettre aujourd'hui aux agriculteurs de vivre dignement de leur travail, de vivre dignement de leur métier. Et pour faire face à ces défis de plus en plus imbriqués, il n'est plus possible de continuer d'appliquer les mêmes méthodes, les mêmes recettes. Il n'est plus possible aujourd'hui de fonctionner en silo, en prenant en compte le climat d'un côté, la sécurité alimentaire de l'autre, ou la biodiversité, les aspects économiques d'un autre côté encore. Il nous faut aujourd'hui travailler ensemble pour de nouvelles approches innovantes, des nouvelles approches intégrées. Il nous faut développer des systèmes agricoles et alimentaires qui soient performants en même temps au plan économique, social, environnemental et sanitaire. L'agroécologie, mesdames et messieurs, elle répond à ces enjeux. L'agroécologie, en s'appuyant sur les régulations biologiques, favorise le bouclage des grands cycles, le stockage du carbone vers les sols et la biodiversité. Elle améliore la fertilité des sols et leur rétention en eau, essentielle à une bonne productivité. Elle donne une plus grande autonomie aux agriculteurs en réduisant leur dépendance aux intrants et donc leur charge d'exploitation. La résilience face aux aléas climatiques, économiques et sanitaires s'en trouve ainsi nettement améliorée. C'est pour ces raisons que le ministère de l'Agriculture et de l'Alimentation s'est engagé dès 2012 dans un projet national de développement de l'agroécologie. Puis il s'est fixé en 2014, en adoptant la loi d'avenir pour l'agriculture, l'alimentation et la forêt, l'objectif très ambitieux d'engager la majorité des exploitations agricoles françaises dans des pratiques agroécologiques à l'horizon 2025. Les États généraux de l'alimentation que nous avons lancés à la demande du président de la République Emmanuel Macron et que j'ai piloté ces derniers mois ont confirmé bien évidemment ce cap. Et l'objectif des États généraux, c'est de relancer la création de valeur dans les filières, d'en assurer l'équitable répartition pour permettre aux agriculteurs de vivre dignement de leur travail par le paiement de prix justes. Il s'agit en même temps de répondre davantage aux attentes et aux besoins des consommateurs, aux attentes et aux besoins de nos citoyens, en privilégiant une alimentation sûre, saine, durable et accessible à tous. Les États généraux ont mobilisé plus de 700 participants provenant du monde agricole, des industries, de la restauration collective, de la distribution, des consommateurs, des élus, des partenaires sociaux, des ONG, des banques, des assurances. La feuille de route des États généraux a pleinement repris à son compte la nécessité pour nos systèmes agricoles et alimentaires d'atteindre la multi-performance économique, environnementale, sociale et sanitaire. Les systèmes de production sont en cours de transformation via des plans de filière ambitieux pour cheminer vers des modes de production plus respectueux de notre environnement. En outre, pour mieux répondre à la demande croissante de produits issus de l'agriculture biologique, il a été décidé de développer en 2018 un nouveau plan, un plan ambition bio 2018-2022 et que j'ai eu l'occasion de présenter hier à Paris. Pour atteindre ces objectifs, il faut s'appuyer bien évidemment sur les agriculteurs, qui sont les premiers acteurs de ces transformations qui sont aujourd'hui nécessaires. Ensemble, ils peuvent davantage peser sur les choix de stratégie à mettre en œuvre et ne pas se voir imposer des choix de modèles de production par les opérateurs de l'aval. C'est aussi le meilleur moyen pour peser dans la négociation avec ceux qui achètent leur production et permettre ainsi une rémunération plus juste de leur travail. Et pour accompagner concrètement cette transition qui est attendue par nos concitoyens, je souhaite poursuivre, approfondir, diversifier les mesures et les actions initiées avec le projet agroécologique pour la France. Et j'ai notamment à cœur de soutenir les projets d'innovation participative. C'est un point important parce que l'agroécologie, mesdames et messieurs, c'est aussi une démarche sociale basée sur l'intelligence collective, sur les connaissances, sur l'échange et l'innovation. Et j'entends dire parfois que les pratiques agroécologiques sont des pratiques du passé, des pratiques dépassées. Je pense au contraire que l'agroécologie, c'est quelque chose de résolument moderne et agile. C'est en couplant les solutions techniques appropriées, y compris numériques, avec l'application des principes de l'agroécologie, que nos agricultures pourront relever clairement le défi de la transition écologique. Les agriculteurs qui connaissent finement leur contexte de production sont en première ligne aujourd'hui pour innover, proposer des solutions les plus adaptées, ancrées dans leur territoire. Et sans leur engagement, sans leur investissement, rien n'est possible. Certains d'entre eux ont pu présenter leur démarche lors de ce symposium. Il nous faut encore les associer davantage à nos discussions et sortir des approches top-down pour construire avec eux des solutions d'avenir. À titre d'illustration, en France, l'État reconnaît et appuie les groupements d'intérêt économique et environnemental, les GI2E. Ce sont des collectifs d'agriculteurs qui sont engagés dans un projet pluriannuel de transition agroécologique. Ces collectifs sont aujourd'hui au nombre de 500 et regroupent près de 7500 exploitations. Autre exemple, 3000 fermes, dites fermes défi, qui sont regroupées en 250 groupes, mènent des expérimentations et produisent des références pour la production des produits phytosanitaires, tout en garantissant, bien sûr, les résultats économiques des exploitations. Et ces fermes, elles ont déjà démontré qu'il est ainsi possible de réduire l'usage des pesticides sans dégrader la rentabilité économique des exploitations. Alors, partant de ce constat de réussite, je souhaite, dans le cadre du plan Ecophyto 2, multiplier par 10 le nombre de fermes engagées dans l'agroécologie à bas niveau de produits phytosanitaires pour atteindre 30 000 fermes, soit 10% des exploitations françaises. Bien sûr, l'innovation réclame aussi de mobiliser la recherche publique, les instituts techniques agricoles, les chambres d'agriculture, les instituts de formation dans un continuum allant de la recherche à la formation et au conseil. En France, l'enseignement agricole s'est doté d'un plan enseigner à produire autrement, qui va, entre autres, conduire à revoir les référentiels de formation des lycées agricoles à la lumière des principes agroécologiques. Je veux souligner aussi le rôle de la recherche, qui est indispensable pour valider au plan scientifique les innovations, évaluer les pratiques et mesurer leurs impacts, indispensables également pour répondre aux besoins des agriculteurs, en particulier quand ils font face à des impasses techniques. Indispensable, enfin, pour comprendre et éclairer les décideurs sur la manière de lever les freins à l'adoption de nouvelles approches. Et je veux saluer la mobilisation des organismes de recherche français, l'INRA, le CIRAD, l'IRD et Agrinium, qui sont présents ici, et les remercier pour leur engagement à nos côtés et aux côtés de la FAO également, pour accompagner cette transition en France et ailleurs dans le monde. Il me paraît, par ailleurs, indispensable, pour opérer la transition vers la multi-performance, que ces démarches soient pleinement intégrées dans des logiques de filière. Cela réclame de mobiliser, au-delà des agriculteurs et des acteurs institutionnels, les entreprises de l'amont comme les entreprises de l'aval, car pour changer d'échelle, il faut pouvoir entraîner l'ensemble de la chaîne. Et si je me suis un peu, et vous m'en excuserez, attardé sur l'expérience française, c'est parce que je tenais à illustrer le fait que les approches agroécologiques peuvent apporter des réponses innovantes au nord comme au sud. Elles sont adaptées à des exploitations de quelques hectares comme à des exploitations beaucoup plus grandes de quelques centaines d'hectares, et c'est le cas en France. Nous avons tous besoin de systèmes agricoles et alimentaires suffisamment productifs, suffisamment intensifs, et je tenais à dire, parce que pour la France et pour le ministère de l'Agriculture, l'agroécologie est totalement compatible avec cet objectif. Et c'est dans cet esprit que je plaide pour que la prochaine politique agricole commune, à l'horizon 2020, reconnaisse mieux, soutienne davantage dans son premier et son second pilier les initiatives qui vont viser à mieux rémunérer les services environnementaux rendus par l'agriculture. Et je suis par ailleurs très heureux que le dernier comité interministériel de la coopération internationale et du développement, le CICCID, ait fait du renforcement de l'appui à l'agriculture familiale à travers une intensification agroécologique, une des priorités françaises pour l'appui au développement agricole dans les pays du Sud. Je viens conclure. Nous nous sommes collectivement engagés à relever les défis du XXIe siècle dans le cadre de l'agenda 2030 et de l'accord de Paris. L'agriculture, l'élevage, la pêche, l'aquaculture, les forêts sont autant de secteurs porteurs de solutions pour répondre à ces défis, pour autant que nous nous mobilisons pour réaliser les transitions nécessaires. Le dialogue international est indispensable pour nous permettre d'avancer avec le rythme requis, car le temps nous est compté pour relever en particulier le défi climatique. La FAO a effectué ces dernières années, monsieur le directeur général, un travail important en faveur de l'agroécologie, et je tiens à vous remercier, monsieur le directeur général, pour l'impulsion que vous avez donnée en 2014 en organisant le premier symposium international sur l'agroécologie et pour nous avoir à nouveau réunis aujourd'hui. Nous devons donc ensemble poursuivre ces efforts. Et la France continuera pour cela de s'impliquer dans l'initiative 4 pour 1000, des sols pour la sécurité alimentaire et le climat qui vise à développer la séquestration du carbone organique dans les sols en améliorant leur fertilité. Un autre jalon important sera le rapport sur l'agroécologie que le panel de haut niveau sur la sécurité alimentaire doit préparer pour que le comité de sécurité alimentaire mondiale puisse se pencher sur cette question en 2019. Ce doit être l'occasion d'un débat fructueux, apaisé, constructif, avec l'ensemble des parties prenantes, car le changement d'échelle indispensable pour relever les défis auxquels nous faisons face va nécessiter l'implication de tous, les agriculteurs, la recherche, les gouvernements, les entreprises privées, les citoyens et les consommateurs. Et je veux encore une fois saluer la belle implication de la recherche à travers l'INRA, l'IRD et le CIRAD. Pour réussir ensemble la transition agroécologique, nous avons besoin plus que jamais de la FAO. Monsieur le directeur général, nous attendons de la FAO qu'elle soit aujourd'hui le moteur du changement et de la mobilisation que nous attendons tous ici. La FAO, mesdames et messieurs, vous le savez, elle dispose d'un savoir-faire unique en matière de capitalisation des acquis de la recherche, de la collecte, de la diffusion des connaissances. Nous attendons de la FAO qu'elle mette ses compétences au service de l'agroécologie, notamment pour appuyer les pays dans la définition de leur politique. La FAO a également un rôle essentiel pour favoriser le dialogue et les échanges. Ce symposium est un excellent exemple et nous attendons que les échanges puissent se poursuivre. Nous attendons enfin qu'en lien avec les autres organisations romaines, elles contribuent à diffuser les méthodes et les bonnes pratiques reconnues. La FAO a également un rôle essentiel pour favoriser le dialogue et les échanges. Aussi, je me félicite du lancement, lors de ce symposium, de l'initiative Scaling Up Agroecology. Soyez assurés du soutien de la France pour continuer à promouvoir l'agroécologie aux côtés de la FAO et pour contribuer à cette initiative. Soyez assurés, mesdames et messieurs, de notre total engagement à vos côtés. C'est aujourd'hui qu'ensemble, nous préparons le futur et le présent des générations qui nous succéderont et qui regarderont avec attention ce que nous avons fait. Merci de votre attention.
Thank you very much, Minister. I would like to give the floor now to Her Excellency Kathleen Todt, Deputy State Secretary from the Ministry of Agriculture of Hungary. You have the floor, please.
Thank you. Dear Director General, Ministers, Ambassadors, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I would like to say thank the FAO for organizing this important symposium, and also thank you very much for providing me this opportunity to make my contribution on behalf of my minister, Dr. Sándor Fazekas. Ladies and gentlemen, convening this second international symposium on agroecology is highly relevant and appropriate. I am very pleased to let you know that Hungary has been constructively involved in the preparations by contributing to the work of Friends of Agroecology Group of permanent representatives here in Rome. More importantly, we were honored to host the Regional Agroecology Symposium for Europe and Central Asia in November last year in Budapest. Then we had a successful high-level side event organized during the COP23 in Bonn. We presented the main outcomes of the regional symposium, focusing on the role of agroecology in reducing CO2 emission of agriculture and mitigating the impacts of climate change, thus assisting countries in their efforts to achieve their nationally determined contributions. The outcomes of that symposium have been presented during the first days here. When reading the recommendations of this symposium, I was very pleased to see that many of the key findings, such as the possible contribution of agroecology to Agenda 2030 and the SDGs, resurface here. Agriculture has a very rich history in Hungary. It has always played a significant role in our economy and culture. Hungarian agriculture is quite diverse. It also places a high emphasis on small-scale and family farms. The viability of rural areas and preservation of landscape and rural livelihoods have high importance in our policies and practices as well. Traditional rural knowledge is abundant in the country, while on the other hand, our country is also well known for applying results of innovative agricultural techniques and high-level research, with the exception of the cultivation of GMOs, which is not compatible with the principles of agroecology. Thus, I am proud to say that Hungary's fundamental law clearly declares that no genetically modified organisms can be cultivated within our borders. Thank you. Hungary is committed to rely on traditional agricultural knowledge combined with innovative techniques and practices which help to make agriculture more sustainable and profitable at the same time. Thus, we have shown great interest from the very beginning in this recently discovered holistic agricultural approach. We also agree that agroecology should be linked to other relevant and important areas, such as the globally important agricultural heritage system, the GIES. In this respect, I wish to inform you that Hungary is currently working on its own proposal to qualify pannon herding systems, a traditional and sustainable herding method, as GIES. Besides, there are other possible ways of promoting agroecology in our region. The reform of the Common Agricultural Policy of the EU is currently ongoing. we can already see that sustainability requirements will receive a higher priority, thus contributing to the SDGs and the Agenda 2030. Agroecology could play an important role in making future European agriculture more sustainable. In this regard, I would like to underline the strong European commitment towards the transition from vertical food systems to circular ones to reduce carbon and ecological footprint of agriculture. Agroecology incorporates the cultural economy approach, therefore it can serve as an efficient method in the transition process. Considering the extensive knowledge of FAO regarding agroecology, we would encourage the organization to actively engage in relevant dialogues with European member states and EU institutions. The planned dialogue with the UN Economic and Social Council is also an important milestone. Nevertheless, I would also encourage discussions with the ILO, in particular because preserving and creating sustainable, attractive jobs in rural areas is an extremely important element that can contribute to put agroecology into practice. When talking about improving rural employment, special focus should be given to women and youth, along with ensuring living wage security in these areas. We also find it important to include bilateral and triangular partnerships as regards to principles and best practices of agroecology. South-South cooperation is an excellent tool for promoting this agricultural approach. Hungary has an ongoing cooperation with the UN Office for South-South Cooperation. We have been participating since 2015 in a joint development program for improving food security, bringing new research results and traditional agricultural knowledge to other rural areas of the world. Dear ladies and gentlemen, agroecology with its multi-stakeholder, transdisciplinary approach places great emphasis on traditional knowledge as well as on modern research. While agricultural research frameworks are mostly developed in all countries of the world, self-managed research and farmer innovation often lack professional background and support. Thus, it is our dedication to call upon FAO as well as responsible national and international institutions to strengthen farmers' extension service networks for research and horizontal spread of agricultural innovations, strengthen the capacity of farmers and citizens to facilitate transdisciplinary innovations that bridge different knowledge systems and give farmers and citizens enough financial security and paid time to engage and participate in the whole research cycle, including the evaluation of research programs and institutes. We also welcome that the Scaling Up of Agroecology initiative wishes to see the design of new or further improved existing policies in order to create a supportive legal environment for agroecology. In this process, it is also important to identify, quantify, and qualify those policies that work against agroecology. Furthermore, while promoting agroecology and broadening its scope, we must also keep in mind how to make this process economically viable. Agroecological transfer requires great amount of investments, and we are aware that the financial and institutional background varies from country to country. By leveling the playing field of the competition, we can create a supportive environment for farmers' transition to more sustainable agricultural practices. In this regard, I would also like to emphasize the importance of using true cost accounting when formulating policies for agricultural transition. As it was pointed out by many speakers during this event, positive and negative environmental and social externalities of different agricultural and food systems should be included in relevant decision-making processes. From this perspective, agroecology is the way forward to make food system environmentally sustainable, socially inclusive, and at the same time economically viable. We strongly encourage FAO to use its technical expertise and be involved in these true cost counting calculations. The scaling up agroecology initiative proposed by FAO is very robust and ambitious. We welcome the FAO wishes to channel agroecology into other UN initiatives and strategic programs. We are also very pleased to note that agroecology has become a mainstream topic. We wish to call upon FAO to actively engage in elaborating the appropriate methodology together with the necessary indicators in order to pave the way for agroecology to be really scaled up. Dear ladies and gentlemen, in conclusion, please allow me to underline that Hungary has been a supporter and a cooperative partner of FAO in promoting agroecology, and we look forward to continue our joint work. The topic will remain a priority for us, as I believe most fundamentals required for a successful agroecological transition are already present in our country. We will continue our cooperation with the three Rome-based UN agencies and with our other partners to promote agroecology and assist our partner countries with our existing knowledge so that we can all enjoy the fruits of more sustainable food systems in line with the dedication of Agenda 2030. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Now I'd like to invite Ambassador Niu Doom, the permanent representative from China here at FAO, to deliver his statement from the podium, please.
谢谢主席先生，尊敬的Grazino总干事，各位部长、女士们、先生们，大家下午好。我今天有三个部分的内容想和大家分享，分别是中国在生态农业领域做了哪些工作。 中国未来如何扩大和发展生态农业，以及怎样加强生态农业领域的国际合作。一，中国在生态农业领域所做的工作。中国有耕地 1.35 亿公顷，占国土面积的 14%， 是陆地生态系统的重要组成部分，也是国家粮食安全的根本保证。农业生产方式和技术的改进，使农业生产效率不断提高。但在农业生产的过程中， 化肥、农药、农膜等的大量使用，对农田的生产力和周围的自然生态系统造成了一定的负面影响。对此，中国政府采取了一系列措施来保护和推动生态农业，包括法律、政策 和国际合作三个方面。第一，从法律层面来讲，自2015年1月1日起，新修订的《中华人民共和国环境保护法》正式开始实施，其中明确规定，各级人民政府应当加强对农业环境的保护， 促进农业环境保护新技术的使用，加强对农业污染源的监测预警，推广植物病虫害的综合防治等。保护法要求各级人民政府及其农业等有关部门和机构指导农业生产经营者 科学的种植和养殖，科学合理施用农药、化肥等农业投入品，科学处置农用薄膜、农作物秸秆等农业废弃物，防止农业的面源污染。第二是从政策层面看，过去五年来，中国政府始终坚持生态文明建设，推进绿色发展。这些年来，我们不仅建立完善生态文明绩效考核和责任追究制度，也对生态环境良好的乡镇进行表彰和奖励。截至2011年，共有1559个符合条件的乡镇获得全国环境优美乡镇的证书。随着国内乡村旅游日渐风靡，这些拥有国家认证的美丽乡镇也越来越多地吸引到了城镇居民的目光，成为了许多家庭出行旅游的首选。第三，从国际合作层面看，中国重视与其他国家的合作，特别是在 FAO 框架下的合作。我们是生态农业友好小组的一员，在生态农业秘书处的指导下开展各项工作。我们还支持 FAO 的全球重要农业文化遗产工作。GIAS 是生态农业的具体实践，也是其中一项显著的表现形式。它源自于千百年来劳动人民和自然环境的亲密对话，是农业从业者适应生态环境、融入生态环境，进而利用生态环境，以达到人与自然和谐共处的成果，凝结着辛勤耕耘的古老的智慧，与保护生态的先进理念。中国在积极申请吉亚斯项目认证的同时，也注重与其他国家分享经验，共同宣传，推进扩大 GIAS 的影响力。去年三月，中国与法国、与意大利等国家共同举办了关于生态农业和 GIAS 的边会，成功地宣传了 GIAS 与生态农业之间的紧密的联系。二，中国生态农业发展的重点。我认为，生态农业是介于有机农业和石油农业之间的一种可持续、可操作的农业发展模式。将来农村的人不仅可以享受城里人那样的公共设施、公共服务，而且还拥有优美环境、田园风光。农村将来会成为稀缺资源，会成为城里人的向往的地方。中国未来政策实施的方向将重点关注农业供给侧结构性的改革，大力发展休闲农业和乡村旅游，保护自然资源，改善生态环境，更好地满足城乡居民对幸福美好生活的向往。 把生态环境优势转化为经济社会发展的优势。总的来说，就是把农业绿色发展摆在生态文明建设全局的突出位置，全面建立以绿色生态为导向的制度体系，基本形成与自然环境承载力相匹配、与生产、生活、生态相协调的农业发展格局，努力实现耕地数量不减少、耕地质量不降低、地下水不超采、化肥、农药使用量零增长、农业废弃物资源化利用，实现农业可持续的发展，农民的生活更加富裕，乡村更加美丽宜居。三，未来的合作领域，经济全球化和贸易全球化是发展的趋势，也是必然结果。为了推动生态农业领域国际合作，我有以下建议：一是联合国系统领导的多边合作应该成为各国普遍参与和支持的主要平台。在未来，我们希望有更多感兴趣的成员能够加入生态农业友好小组，在 FAO 框架下共同讨论如何进一步扩大和发展生态农业。二是通过南南合作及三方合作、南北合作，加强农业基础设施建设、农民的能力建设，分享生态农业技术和成果。三是充分考虑 GIAS 与生态农业的紧密联系和相互促进作用。我希望有一天，在座的各位能够到各国 GIAS 的项目点去亲自的看一看，亲自去感受传统的农业文化，能够亲口的品尝当地优质的农产品，相信你们会对生态农业的未来更加充满信心。谢谢大家。
Thank you very much, Ambassador. Now I would like to invite His Excellency Mohammed Hossein Emadi, Ambassador and Permanent Representative of IRA to FAO.
Director General, Ministers, ladies and gentlemen, and honorable delegates. It's a pleasure to be here at the second International Symposium on Agroecology on behalf of Minister of Agriculture of Iran, Mr. Hojati, which is now in Iran because of new Persian New Year holiday. Therefore, it was not possible for him to attend, and from his behalf, I actually congratulate this event. And I'm glad that more people than ever before are asking what is agroecology. And now in this event and this symposium, we are talking about what is the future of the and roadmap for the scaling up of the agroecology, which is a one step ahead. Let me go directly to the point of discussion. Actually, I'm addressing three questions: why agroecology is important for Iran, and what has been done in the field of agroecology in Iran, and what are lessons learned for the future of agroecology from our case and our region, Near East and North Africa. In the circumstances of Iran, which is actually, as you know, the international relationship is not that interrelated and interconnected, but the agroecology in Iran is mainly developed based on the demands, challenges, and problems. Not based on the declarations, not based on the international forces, and so on, mainly based on the real needs and demands. And that shows us that the problem, challenge, and issues are the main sort of demands and main sort of reason for developing, merging, and emerging of agroecology in Iran. And also the other issue is the potentials and the possibilities that we have in Iran, which give us this opportunity to see and to monitor the evolution of agroecology in Iran. Of course, if I start with the challenges that we are facing with, and agroecology is going to address that, the first one is the severe water scarcity in Iran, which is one of the worst situations in the whole world. And now it is not only an agricultural issue, not only environmental issue, but unfortunately is national security issue, because it's made lots of social and social crisis, social conflict, and so on, and led to a desertification, growing dust and haze, which is now a growing issue in the whole region. And unfortunately, because of the same reason, the low level of the water and also the water scarcity, we are facing the low agricultural productivity and family income led to migration, social conflicts, and poverty. And raising food safety and food security also is another issue that we are facing with, and it's very important for us. And environmental and raising climate change issues, which is a more severe in Near East, in Iran, also are part of the reason. And the potential that we have, which help us to merge the agroecology in Iran, I can just mention about the opportunities and potential. It's 12,000 years of history of agriculture in Iran. The practices led to the rich agroecological pattern of agriculture in Iran among the farmers, particularly in terms of sustainable water management system, which Gannat is one of the best examples, which is recognized by FAO as a GIAS first, some sort of case of GIAS in Iran. And also risk management and resilience among the farmers, which are, I can call it not only the agriculture, but I can call it horticulture, full of the skills, full of the art of working with the water and sort of the different skills. High level of ecological diversity in Iran, biodiversity is a great natural opportunity for as a potential. And deeply rooted culture and religion, which epistemologically considered all natural elements holistic and integrated to each other and give us an epistemological framework and conceptual framework for agroecology to grow. Dominant family farming system in Iran with actual concerning social wealth and network also is another reason as a potential, and food chain and supply market has not been dominated by international companies yet in Iran, and is still flexible to include the emerging agroecological products distribution easily and more or less freely. Very active civil societies, NGOs, and CBOs, which initiated so many agroecological innovative projects in Iran, which we are witnessing in this conference and the previous symposium about their work in Iran. Formal action made in national level, so far various research studies, pilot cases, and even large-scale activities has been conducted in Iran as a part of the action that have been done formally by the government with the support of both international and national organizations as well as NGOs and CBOs, civil societies. One of them is, if I want to categorize all the activities that have been done, first group of activities, I can call it put the farmer first. Listen to the farmer, and working with the farmer just instead of working for the farmers. This activity can be divided in integrated pest management for sustainable production and marketing in Iran, which started 25, 30 years ago. For the first time, agricultural engineers start listening to the farmer and integrating the farmer to the process of work. Integrated participatory crop management, again, which introduced 20 years ago, and also evolutionary population, living genes banks in the farmer field in Iran, organic agriculture as a strategy for improving a small farmer's livelihood in Iran. These activities mainly focus on farmers and farmers' role, and also SRI, System of Rice Intensification, also introduced in Iran, which is same area and same notion to bring the people in the field and to include the farmers in the process of change and agriculture development. The second set of activities is protection, promotion, and regulatory activities like establishment of organic production certification and distribution system and market, conservation of biodiversity in central Zagros mountainous area, which was done by the government or the agencies, saving and protecting the biodiversity of wetland in Parishan, Anzali, and Urumiye Lake have been done. And the third set of activities in the field of agriculture, in the field of agroecology, can be named in terms of knowledge generation and dissemination, documenting and reporting, protecting national important agricultural heritage, which we call it NIAS, system was actually started 2001. Establishment master and PhD courses in agroecology in two major universities in Iran established, and now we have a wide range of master and PhD students in the field of agroecology, which are the engine for knowledge generation and improvement of agroecology in terms of academic agenda and academic arena. According to why the agroecology is important for us and what have been done by government, I can mention some of the lessons that we learned through this sort of activity. According to our experience and what has been shared in the symposium as a global experience, agroecology as a new paradigm and a way of agriculture is a living and a growing concept. Agroecology goes beyond technical solutions to strengthen socio-ecological system and put people at the center of the focus. That, I think, is a major lesson that we learn, that without people, without working with people, not just for people, agroecology and all this sort of change cannot be happen. And this, we need to put the farmer first and the first sort of priority if we are looking for any kind of innovation, any kind of participatory approach, and any kind of successful agroecology. Agroecological transition can take a diversity of pathway depending on the local context. It is have been done in Iran in different areas, different type of agroecological experience and so on, and yet they also show that in all contexts, isolated initiative of farmers are not sufficient. We cannot be happy, we cannot be proud of drops in the ocean or the spots in the country. We need to actually upscale it, and we need to network it and put them together and upgrade them. And facilitation and helping them as a manipulation, which I call it fussy manipulating of the agroecology. And therefore, effective change must be sought in at the territorial level, and national and international organizations need to help us. According to this sort of conclusion, very rough conclusion, we believe that the four major sort of support and facilities need to be done and need to be offered. And these four major areas, as one is political and policy support system. Without political support system and policy formulation, nothing can be sustainable. Although it is necessary but not sufficient. We know that so many governments put so many rules and regulations, but after coup d'etat, after changing the government, all sort of rules, regulations come down and agroforestry go down. This is why this agroecology should be grassroots and work with the people, despite of just working with the government. But this is an essential factor that we have the government in the system and policy formulation, political support should be done. Second, innovative new financial and market mechanism. Without market flexibility, without new approach of market supporting the agroecology system, we think that it cannot be work, particularly with such a dominant economical situation and financial situation in the world. Technical and professional support system, like knowledge generation for agroecology, which I think so far we have done a lot of work. Most of the academics here spend lots of their time and life in this area, but it still needs to be done. in that area, an institutional capacity building, global networking, information and appreciation system for agroecology also is very important. We have thousands of islands throughout the world. Without networking, without connecting, interconnecting them, we cannot lead to any area. And the role of organizations like FAO is very, very essential to bring this island together and networking them with the IT, with the new digital sort of very easygoing type of technology, to networking them and upscaling them and networking them for a better and powerful role in the future. And of course, one of the major important things that I think FAO can do is conducting an appreciative system for agroecology. What I mean by appreciative system is some kind of Olympia, some kind of competition, worldwide, regional, to bring the farmers successful in agroecology, to appreciate the policymakers which supported agroecology, to give them medal, award, and kind of things. This type of appreciative system for agroecology, I think, is a must and can be a very successful tool, along with the information, institutional capacity building, and networking. We all know that agroecology is about hundreds of millions of family farmers, pastoralists, fisher folk, indigenous people, women and men, who produce not just food, but also co-create local culture and cuisines, agricultural biodiversity, and economic prosperity. Since the upcoming decade is called by UN Family Farming Decade, it is, I think, essential for FAO to focus on agroecology as a supporting system and major role player in that event for next coming event, which is completely parallel with the Family Farming Decade, and agroecology can be a supportive and complementary part. Social mobilization is a key factor in the facilitating and transformative potential of agroecology, since it is the sum of local transformation and innovation that will lead to a global transformation. Networks of actors and experience-sharing platforms are emerging in all regions, including producers, consumers, civil societies, and researchers, and needs to be supported. It is time to create a network of policymakers, along with the producer and all part of the team, but also the policymaker, to join this mobilization effort. And thanks for the group of friends of agroecology in FAO, which can work as a semi sort of governmental supporting policy system that can play the role. And the role of government is a fundamental for creating an enabling environment for agroecology. And reviewing policies and legal and financial framework is an urgent task to promote agroecological transition. The regional dialogues in Tunis and Asia show that the main features of public policies for agroecology are their comprehensive nature, participatory and context specific approach, interdisciplinary and transformative intent. To conclude the whole discussion, actually, I think the major issue have been mentioned, that we need to focus on four major areas, from the policy and political support to the market and financial issues, to the institutional building and supporting the networking of the agroecological activities in the world. Now we need to actually again focus on the knowledge generation, as we mentioned. And these are the four major areas of activities, and I'm sure without support of FAO, nothing can be happen. And thanks again for FAO, Director General, to put it as a milestone for the growth of agroecology as a sort of step forward, and we wish all you the best and hope that that would be a step forward and actually a growing situation for the agroecology. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ambassador. Let me now invite His Excellency Silvana Maria Tomasi, the Archbishop of the Holy See, to address us from the podium. Thank you.
Director General José Graciano da Silva, chairperson of the symposium. The Holy See is happy to take part in this second symposium on agroecology. In fact, it's part of the Holy See task to highlight a moral ethical dimension in the international work to apply ecology's demands to agriculture. This approach seems necessary because the main goal of agriculture is the production of food sufficient for the human family and the responsibility linked to this process. The right of people to adequate food calls for cooperative action, and this can be effective if nature creation is respected. Thus, family farms, industrial agriculture, both must channel their work toward efficient production. In the long run, production is efficient if ecology is respected. All agricultural work should move in the direction of becoming agroecological. Scaling up and scaling out makes sense in such a context. Pope Francis' encyclical Laudato Si addresses the fact that everything is linked together. This interconnectedness, in the case of agriculture, applies to the relations of man to nature, the relation of production to the market, the relations to the distribution of food with the open society. The perspective of interconnectedness keeps the human person as the point of reference of all activity, as the center of all concerns. It helps to implement the Sustainable Development Goals, because respecting the link nature, agriculture, food is the path toward reducing hunger in the world, toward a fairer access to the food market, and toward a responsible stewardship of the resources of nature. The 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development, launched in 2016, includes some transformational shifts in the terms of how development is understood by the international community. The 17 Sustainable Development Goals and the 169 targets sit at the heart of the 2030 Agenda. They cover a broad range of issues, including sustainable agriculture. Goal 2, in fact, is about ending hunger, achieving food security, and improving nutrition and promoting sustainable agriculture. But this goal should not be seen in isolation, but rather alongside other commitments of the agenda, such as inclusive education, health care, social protection, migration, peace and justice, oceans, forests, climate change, decent jobs, and economic development. Everything is interconnected. In short, we must not leave anyone behind. We need to produce and to feed humanity through agroecology. Goal 8 of the Sustainable Development Goals affirms that the international community must endeavor to promote economic growth and full employment without damaging the environment. Regarding agriculture, Goal 9 says that we need to support developing countries to strengthen their scientific and technological capacity. This includes the transfer of environmentally sound technologies. Thus, technological advancement in agriculture cannot remain exclusive for some, but should be shared in order to promote sustainability. And this is what Laudato Si states in number 131. In the common interest, potable water and food have to be available to everyone, and this not only because it is human solidarity requirement, but also to avoid social disruption and even the risk of war. New forms of cooperation are needed in order to forge agroecology, to defend small producers and preserve local ecosystems from destruction. As Pope Francis remarks in Laudato Si, truly much can be done, but working together, it can be done. Thank you.